obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marty. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a member of the Lions Group in Richmond, British Columbia, which is awesome. It's a great group. My sponsor's name is Dick. If you don't know Dick, you don't know Dick. And it's a real privilege always to if anybody's got anything bad to say about Southern California AA, they're stupid. Because so much good has come from here, and your people are incredible. This conference, I've never seen a conference program the same thickness as the Big Book. But anyway, it's wonderful. Beverly, you're incredible. Thank you. The hottest chairperson I've ever seen. Yeah, I know your husband's not here, so, I'd already embarrassed her at the elevator in front of her son, so I thought, what the heck. And my good friend Tina came to hear you. She traveled all the way from four blocks. It's amazing. Larsine, I think I'm here probably because of Larsine and the infamous Butch that we hear about everywhere she goes. I didn't think she was married at all until the guy finally showed up, but... I've loved the convention. I mean, what a start that was, right? We had honored the veterans. There was a Marine flag group. There, Bette Midler singers. it built, and then finally a newcomer came out, pulled himself out of his own rear end, and... thanked the treatment center and said he loved his counselor, relapsed, did the steps, listened to Larry's talk, and now sponsors 12 people. It was awesome. Incredible. I have never seen such a successful AA Al-Anon mix. I've been talking probably for 38 years. Amazing. I mean, if you're new in the room and you don't know what Al-Anon is, Al-Anon... people are the friends and family of alcoholics, but they're just as crazy as we would ever know how to be. The difference is that they do not drink because it might numb the pain. I think you should dig yourself a hole and then try and get out of it as the meeting progresses. I love Al-Anon. I love everything about Al-Anon. I even think that, you know that GPS in your car? That's an Al-Anon in there. Right? They keep making suggestions, and it sounds like they're right. You don't know if they're right, you know? Turn left, turn right. You know, and if you don't listen, they don't get mad. They just keep repeating themselves. And if you completely go off course, they don't get mad. They just say, recalculating. It's how that goes. Yeah. This is a beautiful audience. You're a beautiful looking bunch. And I would just pray that I could give half the talk that Larry P. gave last night. Was that an astounding... It made me want to drink again so that I could get under a house and have a pet. And... It was really amazing. It was emotional and wonderful, and the Al-Anon talks. And every talk I've heard, I went to the marathon meeting that my host Dale had. There was a number of people there, and I think marathon meetings are something that you have to experience. And so I would highly recommend you all go. Anyway, that's enough about me. What do you think about Alcoholics Anonymous? A program that tells you get over yourself, then flies you 3,000 miles to talk about yourself. Another AA paradox, Nispa. I had my last drink of alcohol February the 8th of 1976. Yeah, wow. And I did not know it was going to be my last drink of alcohol. I would have probably had something I liked. But, I mean, I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous in the sense of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. My sister, the meddler, you know, I have two brothers. They're both alcoholic. I can understand that. In fact, I sponsored them both into Alcoholics Anonymous. Mike, who was the nemesis of my entire life growing up, showed up on my doorstep when I was about 18 years sober and said, "You're the only person on earth I trust. Would you sponsor me?" And I went, you know that. you know when you're out there drinking, you forgot how to laugh from your stomach. It just comes from about here. So, oh yeah, I'll sponsor you. Get in here, you. So anyway. And I have a brother, Paul, who's also alcoholic. And Paul started putting substances up his nose about 12 years or so into it. And I don't know a thing about cocaine except that if you're an alcoholic of my variety and you take that as well, alcohol has the decency to knock you out. Apparently, cocaine says, "Hey, stay up, let's talk. Let's visit." You know what I mean? All right, so I didn't really mean it. I was just joking about the. So anyway, two alcoholic brother and sister are alcoholic brothers, and then I've got this sister. She just meddles. She doesn't drink. That's what's wrong with her. She just wants. She's in everybody's business. Still is to this day. In fact, my sponsor Dick one time said, "When are you going to apologize to your sister?" I said, "For what?" He said, "Get serious. You know when you lent her all that money and she lost it all? When are you going to apologize for that?" I said, "What? Have you gone senile or something? What are you talking about?" He said, "You told me you gave her a ton of money and she lost it all and you haven't talked to her for 7 years." I said, "Yeah, I'm mad at her." He said, "Did you know that she couldn't handle money when you lent it to her? Big shot?" Immediately didn't know why I had him as a sponsor. You know what I mean? But you know what happened as the result of that was that I phoned her. I made an amend. That was on Christmas Eve. Christmas Day happened, and my mother died the day after Christmas. And because of that amend, our family was able to come together. Isn't that the most amazing thing in Alcoholics Anonymous? Grace only happens about 5 seconds before you actually need it. I'm just hoping God's going to give me some here pretty soon. You know. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 23 years old, and in those days there were not a lot of people under the age of dead. My sister phoned Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been out on a tear. I had done the prayer. I had done the foxhole prayer. I had told God, as we do, alcoholics do, "If you could just get me out of this, I will never drink again. I will become a missionary." And then I heard the phone ringing, and it was a horrendous. This last rip was like inexplicable. Did you find that you had low standards you couldn't live up to at the end of your drinking? You know, like, you know, I had an uncle that used to get drunk and close one eye, you know, and he was a decorated Canadian war hero, and when he'd get drunk, he was in the infantry. And he'd get drunk and regale us with stories about his time in the Navy. With one eye closed. You know. Uncle Sammy. And I thought, if I ever get to the point where that one eye closes, I will stop drinking. And so in the middle of this fight, when I get home, my wife is saying, "You know, and when that eye of yours closes." And I'm thinking, if I ever get to a point where both eyes close, I am going to... I had, you know, and if you have the disease of alcoholism, maybe you're new in the room tonight, you're wondering if you're an alcoholic or not an alcoholic. And I can make it really, really clear for you, if you start to drink and you can't control how much you drink, that's the one, right there. My father was a heavy drinker. He could drink, stop, start, drink, social, not drink. He didn't care. I was a mystery to him. He couldn't understand why. He used to say to me, "Martz, you've had a bucket already. You don't like stand down." I couldn't stop. And I couldn't stay stopped once I tried to stop. That's all that makes you alcoholic. So if you've got that, welcome home. And I'm going to tell you something, it only gets worse. We just want to encourage you here at the Saturday night group. So I had quit drinking the night before the last rip. I had told God he'd got me out of all the trouble, and then I had gone to work in the morning, and I got one of those, you know, alcoholic interviews that happens only to alcoholics. Do you know what I mean? Like, people keep forgiving you for stuff they should not forgive you for. I had been in the tree outside of the city hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning, howling and making vampire noises, trying to keep people awake. I don't know why we do stuff like that. I have no idea. I had been naked in a furniture store window, apparently, earlier in the night. Don't remember any of that. I remember a car chase. I remember a female breast. I knew it wasn't one of ours. I hadn't seen ours in months, but I knew it was not one of ours. And then I remembered a gun, and I remembered a guy, and it was morning. Oh. You know, you would think God would have the decency when you black out to keep you blacked out. Not me. You know, I wake up just as I'm peeing in the vestibule at the church or something like that. That's when I come awake. And so I had all these sort of bits and pieces of the night. It was crazy, crazy stuff. And I told God the AA prayer, and I got to work, and I got called into the office, and they forgave me again. He said, you know, you're really a talented guy, but, you know, you can't keep doing this stuff. Got back. I was a radio broadcaster in those days. I got back on the air, and I was so grateful for the first 2 hours of my shift. And then I started thinking, what a day. God, what a day. I've had so much stress. You know what I mean? And I have here's the words you'll never hear at a meeting of Al-Anon. Keen alcoholic mind. You will never hear those words at an Al-Anon meeting. So, but my keen alcoholic mind started to try to find a way. It's called a strange mental blank spot. It says that we can't bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the suffering and humiliation of a week or a month before. We are without defense against the first drink. Somewhere between desperation and immaturity, we forget what we did. And so 2 hours into the shift, I'm thinking, what a day. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm exhausted. I would really love to have a drink after work. But I remembered I promised the Lord that I would never drink again. And with solemn vow, and then I suddenly remembered something that was pertinent, that Christ's first miracle was turning water into wine. So it's not very long a leap to realize that God wants us to drink wine. If I just go over there and I drink the wine, I'll be fine. And I had 2 or 3 glasses of wine. In the next scene, I snap out of the blackout. I'm punching my friend in the head. And I throw him through the Royal Bank window. Glass and cops and guns in our face and everything like that. And it just, the night was horrendous. So when I come to in the morning, I'm going, how did that start again? You see, I mean, the cycle of alcoholism is a cycle of complete self-deception. That's the thing, that when we're telling you that we're going to quit, we really mean it. That's what the joke is about this. The only person we can't ever get straight with is us. Does that continue into sobriety? Yeah, it does. Not for some of you that are healed, but... You know, it's funny, I had one of my guys phone me the other day, and he said, you know, I was at a meeting last night, and he said, I found out something really interesting about my childhood. And I said, what's that? He said, it's over. Yeah, so anyway, I called back into the boss's office, and he said, you shoved a pizza in my face last night. I said, wow. And he told me that, you know, that they can't do much more for me. And, I mean, I somehow dodged the bullet again. But when I woke up in the morning, I knew that this thing was getting on top of me. I can honestly tell you the word alcoholic had never crossed my mind. I think we become alcoholic in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Prior to that, it's a kind of an ugly word. But when you get in here and you see some of the alcoholics that are, you know, say, attractive. And... It's not so bad to be alcoholic, and I can see the paper tomorrow morning. Speaker pounded by host's son. It's yeah. So anyway, I come to in the morning, and it's the same stuff. I'm in a sweat. I'm trying to find. Can I hear her in the house? I had a son at this time. I had a little boy named Donovan, a 6-month-old baby, and I had this hostage that I'd taken when we were 16 or 17 years old. Here's how you know if you got the right woman if you're an alcoholic. The first night out, I sell her coat because we needed money. And, we were out of booze, and I sold her coat, and I could almost hear her think, I can help him. Do you know what I mean? Yep. Pre-Al-Anon insanity. So anyway, I'm trying to hear if she's in the house and the phone's ringing, and I finally get up and I'm nauseated, sick, and the room is spinning bits and pieces of the night. I pick up the phone and it's my sister, the nosy one. And she has one of those incredible questions. Like, if you're an alcoholic of my variety, the problem is you don't know what they really mean when they ask things like, how are you? My immediate reaction is, what do you know? What have you seen? Who have you been talking to? Like, you know what I'm saying? Well, what do you mean, how am I? Do you mean, how am I? Or how am I? Or, like, why don't you just say what you're thinking, that you think I'm a loser? Why don't you? And it's the crack of noon. I'm nauseated. She's pestering me already. She says, she must have been at an Al-Anon meeting or something, because she says, do you think you have a problem with alcohol? What? I can drink more than anybody I know. I don't have any problems with alcohol. And then she says, if I send somebody over from Alcoholics Anonymous, would you talk to them? And I'm thinking, God, I haven't got enough trouble. Now I got to help some guy from Alcoholics Anonymous. The burden of leadership. You know what I'm talking about, right? And that's when I met him. I did not know this guy's name. Alcoholics Anonymous, the anonymous part's for real. I did not even know this guy's true identity for almost 20 years. He, when the movie came out, Shrek, I realized who he actually was. But he introduced himself as Dwayne. He was a 6'5", 240-pound Norwegian ignoramus. Hit a brush cut. He had a 1976 Ford LTD, robin egg blue with vinyl seats. And he wanted to go to the A&W with me for coffee. Coffee with a gorilla at the A&W. I'm thinking, I'm going to kill her. When I get a hold of her, I will choke her to death. That sister of mine, nosy, rotten. Anyway, get in the car, we go to the A&W. And of course, this guy has read the chapter, Working with Others. Because he does the classic 12-step call. Instead of getting into everything that I wasn't, he starts talking about getting drunk. And he starts talking about the funny stuff he does getting drunk. Well, I'm an alcoholic. You tell me a story, I'm going to tell you a funnier story. You know how it is at a meeting. Somebody says, I made love to a zebra. Somebody would say, well, at least the one you got was female. You know what I mean? It's one down. And so I started telling him my stuff. And, you know, by the time I'd finished my fifth step, he says to me, the classic, well, it sounds like you don't get in trouble every time you drink, but it sounds like when you get in trouble, you've been drinking. Why don't you stop? I'm going to kill her. I will kill her, because I can't think of any reason why I wouldn't stop. But I know I can't stop. I know I can't stop because prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, the only treatment I had for my alcoholism was alcohol. Alcoholism comes in people. Alcohol comes in bottles. You see, we get that kind of, we think we drank ourselves alcoholic or something. No, you revealed your alcoholism drinking alcohol. And the interesting thing about it is you'll become more alcoholic whether you drink or you don't drink. Do you see what I'm saying? People say to me, you're 38 years sober, you're still going to meetings. I tell them, I need it more today than I did when I got here. I am far crazier than I ever was when I got here. When I got Siri on my Apple, the first thing I said is, do you know where to hide a body? Gave me a list of funeral homes, crematoriums. I love that thing. That's awesome. Yeah, so alcoholism, like the first half of the first step is about addiction. you know, these people from the Department of Redundancy Department, you know that department's department? I'm an alcoholic addict. I think, well, yeah, okay, so like we're addicted to alcohol, so you're an addicted to alcohol addict. I'm confused. You know what I mean? If you're addicted to alcohol, you are different than any other human being on earth. You put 100 people in a room, shoot them up with heroin for a period of time, they'll all be heroin addicts. You put 100 people in a room with alcohol, and about 6 of us will come out pissed off because you called it off, and the rest will just want to go home. You know, it's because you have a broken drinker. And you know, the day that I realized I was alcoholic, I went into a cold sweat. I don't know about you. I was about 90 days sober, driving down the Idlewild Freeway in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. That's where I'm from. It's flat there, so flat that if you stand on a pineapple tin, you can see the back of your own head. It's really flat. I'm driving down the freeway, and I think, oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic. And I phone Shrek, and I say, I'm an alcoholic. He says, congratulations, it's now unanimous. Everybody in the bloody earth knows you're an alcoholic now that you've accepted it. Just don't put it in your mouth, you'll be fine. He said, you know, if you put a bag of diseases in a closet, you'd pick this one. This is a good disease to have, because all you have to do is abstain, and then you can work the rest of your life on learning how to have friends. I said, that's not good enough. I really need to know what's wrong with me. He said, well, I'll tell you what. I know a professional. He'll explain it to you. So the guy's name was Bob. And Bob said, what do you want to know? I said, I want to know what's wrong with me. He said, like, you're an alcoholic. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, you have a biochemical genetic disorder centered in the hypothalamic information control center of your brain and made worse by your body's inability to metabolize alcohol without producing acetaldehyde, which mixed with dopamine produces tetrahydroisoquinoline, which is a nasty combination, given your narcissistic, egocentric core, which is driven at times by feelings of omnipotence, which tend to their own integrity despite the cognitive dissonance and stimulus augmentation. And I know. I said, what does that mean? He says, it means that your drinker is broken and you act like a jerk. That's what it is. So he said the cure for that is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful today that somebody didn't say to me that I was special, different, needed anything different. I just got sent to Alcoholics Anonymous at the hands of these lunatics like Shrek. And Shrek took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at 23 years old. And I went in this room and there they were, the chosen frozen. They were, some of them were like 30, 40, 50 old people, really old. There's a couple of wrinkled up ones that had been like sober for 30 years, liars. And they were going up and down. I didn't know what they were talking about. You understand that when newcomers come around us that the language is strange, words like honest, responsibility. You know, it's very confusing when you first get to Alcoholics Anonymous. These guys were going up and down 12 steps or stairs. I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. That one guy got stuck on the fifth stair, and it was really aggravating to one of the other ones. He said, if you don't get off that fifth stair, you're going to get drunk. And I'm thinking, let's go right straight to the fifth stair. That's where we should start the meeting. That didn't seem like much of a threat to me. You know what I mean? I didn't realize the nature of alcohol at all, that if I continue to drink, I'm going to die. I didn't get that until I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was probably sober 20 years before I really understood what was wrong with me. It's not that I'm a slow learner, it's that I'm belligerent. I love the book on page 48, it says that we have a handicap. I'm trying to get a sticker, by the way. I want closer to Walmart. I'm not above it, you know what I mean. But it says that we're handicapped with obstinacy. This is the greatest thing. Here's a couple of things that will really screw you up. Obstinacy and sensitiveness. Yeah, so we keep at it with people that hate us. We just keep going back. And it says the worst thing that we have is unreasoning prejudice. That means that I have decided how things work. I don't know how I decided how things work, but I intuitively know how things should work. My experience in Alcoholics has been this, in Alcoholics Anonymous has been this. The more set you are in what you think you know, the more you're going to suffer. The stress is defined, it's that measurement of how it actually is and how you'd like it to be, right? A resentment is anger over something that didn't go your way yesterday. Anger is something that's not going my way today. And fear is something I think might not go my way tomorrow. And the common denominator there is my way. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to try and let go of these old ideas. And that's not so easy sometimes when you actually created the earth. So, I'm in this meeting, and there's a guy at the front that looks to me like maybe he passed away, maybe not. I wasn't sure. He had kind of a gray hue to him, and he talked in a monotone voice, and he said the most amazing thing I had ever heard come out of a human being's mouth up until that point. He said, "If you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it," and I kind of look around. You know, there's these coffee-addicted bedwetters that they think they're having fun going to a room on a Saturday morning and talking to one another. Do I want what they have? They're old. I'm thinking, take them out back and knock them down with a rifle or something. For God's sake, put them out of their misery. I didn't even know what they had, but I was pretty sure what I saw I didn't want. And so when I got outside in the parking lot, Shrek said, "How did you like the meeting?" And I said, "I loved it." That was really interesting. You guys have really got something going there. If you ever want to come on my radio show and raise money or anything, he said, "Oh, shut up." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "Shut up." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because you're an alcoholic." I said, "You told me last night that you people don't tell other people that they're alcoholic." He said, "That was last night." You hadn't been to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous last night. Normal people don't go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, Marty. Of course you're an alcoholic. And he said, "You know why they call it Alcoholics Anonymous?" I said, "No." He said, "Because we're anonymous. And we're everywhere. And we're watching you. And if you drink, I'm going to break every bone in your body." I said, "Why do you say things like that?" He said, "Because I love you." Yeah, he said, "I don't want you to get hurt by strangers. I know you're going to get beat up. I'll just beat you up a little bit. I'll even bring you your first beer." So I said, "Well, I have rights." He said, "You don't have. Once you're alcoholic, for 90 days, you don't have any rights." I said, "I'll call the cops." He said, "The cops are in on it." Oh, man. And I knew they'd be in on something like this. I knew the cops were going to do something like that all the way along. He said, "We're going to go to another meeting tonight." I said, "I don't want to go to any more meetings." He said, "I don't care. Get in the car." Today we say, "Would it be all right with you if we travel together?" I'm killing you, understanding you. So I get in the car, he takes me home, I go home to her, I say, "You'll never guess what my sisters got us into. They're murderers. One of them murdered his best friend, beat him to death with his fists, and he's bragging about it at the meeting. These guys are insane. They talk about peeing their pants, they laugh. Somebody gets their family back, they cry. They're nuts. It was like one flew over the cuckoo's nest. And he knows where we live. And he's telling, right now, he's telling the murderer where we live. I don't know about you. I was nervous." And anyway, Shrek came to pick me up for the next meeting. We go to a meeting called Mustard Seed, which I thought was strange, strangely biblical. And there was a group of the same ones from the morning meeting and a couple of girls. And I thought, all right, girls. I was hot. Not so much. I was skinny and drawn looking, but I and delusional. So I'm sitting in this meeting, and it's the same sort of a thing. They're talking about in mystery about these stairs or steps. They're laughing in all the wrong places. I'm waiting for the meeting to end. I think this is going to end. Everything ends, much like some of you are feeling about this talk. And Finally, they say, would the newcomer like to say something? We love to humiliate the newcomers. Right? Just stand up, tell us your name, and humiliate yourself. So I get up, and I've been thrown out of Lions. I'd been thrown out of the university. That's not easy to do. I got, you know, I've been kicked out of everything for my mouth. So I just said, I got a question. Yeah, I'd like to say something. Were you two girls hookers? Thinking they'll be really mad. And I learned something very quickly. Don't mess with the women in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're nasty. And so Ruth, the spokesman for the two of them, said, I was never a hooker, but I used to get really drunk and I'd pick up an anemic-looking little turd like you every once in a while and take him home. Shrek and his spiritually delayed friends thought that was about the funniest thing that they had ever heard in their lives. They were literally on the floor rolling around laughing. And we got outside and I lost it. I didn't care how big he was. I said, I am not going to any more meetings. He said, oh yeah, you are. In fact, you're going to go to more meetings because now that they know who you are and how funny you are, if I don't bring you to the meetings, they're going to be mad. I said, listen. I said, I wasn't trying to be funny. He said, that's what made it so funny. It's, you know, Shrek... I've had people say to me, you know, you're so lucky to have such a great sponsor. And that's true. But I think it's more important to become a great sponsor. Because what Shrek taught me was that if you're not having more fun in Alcoholics Anonymous than you had when you're drinking, you're going to return to drinking. If the pain of sobriety exceeds the comfort of sobriety, you're down. So it is a mandate to get out there and have some fun. It's every single day. You know, the hardest decision you'll ever make in your life is to be happy. I don't know why that is. You left me once. Don't laugh now. It's almost like a real relationship already. Alcoholics Anonymous is sort of like a place to grow up. That's why they call them groups, G-R-O-U-P, grow up. And what we do is we get together and we learn, we have training wheel love affairs.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
You know, any guy in this room that's honest about it has fallen in love with probably every girl at the table at some point. You know what I mean? I would have deep relationships with waitresses because my emotions went all out of control. I hadn't felt anything for 10 years. You know, and I remember one of the guys recently I sponsored in the States phoned me and said, can you talk right now? I said, why? He said, I had a feeling. You know. It was horrible. Or the night that I phoned Shrek and I said, oh my God, I said, I'm home with Donovan. He was about 8 or 9 months old. I was babysitting and I picked him up and I thought, oh my God, this really sick, weird feeling. I'd never had it before. And I thought, oh my God, I'm a pervert. So I put him back in his crib and I phoned Shrek and I said, I think I'm a pervert. And he said, why? I said, well, I picked Donovan up and I had this really icky, weird feeling. He said, it's called love, you idiot. Click, you know. Never experienced that before. I'm the kind of a guy, when I first got sober, an AT&T commercial came on, somebody phoned their mother and I'm crying. You know, American Idol is murder for me. I'm really sensitive. I'm oversensitive, I'm obstinate, and I have unprejudiced reasoning. You see, the problem is the obsession of the abnormal drinker is to control and enjoy his or her drinking. Can you imagine having controlled drinking? I mean, really, if you thought about it, can you stand being with controlled drinkers? Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like take the cap off it, call the police. Pick a window, you're going home. You know what I mean? I don't drink controlled. I have no interest in drinking controlled. Now, the next obsession is to control and enjoy my thinking. Good luck with that. Because my thinking goes in a down spiral immediately into a point where I'm in a pain enough that I can relapse. That's how my actual thinking works. So I have to make a decision every single morning to get up and say, I choose to be happy. I am going to do the things today that are good for me to do, because I don't normally think like that. And so in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a little number called steps. And the reason we have those is because I'm so belligerent, I can't unwind this myself. It's the reason why I think psychiatry and all like that is probably wonderful, but it takes too long. What I have to do is I have to act my way along and get into proper thinking. I have never been able to think my way into proper actions. That's why it's a spiritual program and not a program of psychology. It's not a self-help program. There's a woman in the room today named Ruby. Her husband, who is Milton, used to go to the big bookstores and he'd find the big book in the self-help aisle and he'd flip. What is this doing in a self-help? Because we're not self-help people. We are God-help people. This is a God program. It's a program of action. It's spiritual, which means that you can't see it. Spiritual just means everything that's not material. Imagine somebody going to a laboratory and taking in some love and saying, would you analyze this for me and tell me what it's made up of? See, love is spiritual. Gratitude is spiritual. These are things that you can't touch. They're the only things that will work against my disease. And so I come into Alcoholics Anonymous at 23, and by the age of 24, I've become too spiritual to be in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Shrek said one time that I could pick up a religious album and heal the hole just by touching it. You know, I didn't like the fact that you swore and you smoked. And I mean, I'd gone to the church. I'd become, even though I was lusting after women in the choir, I was in the church and I was just doing the best I could. And one day Shrek picked me up and he was playing this dirty, filthy comedian's tape. And I pulled it out and I broke the tape and he got really mad and he pulled this car over and he said, okay, that's it. You're out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Get out. And I said, really? He said, yes, I'm phoning New York tonight. Your name is coming off of all of the lists. I said, why? And he said, because I have got more spirituality in my rear end than you've got in your whole body, and all you want to do is convince everybody that your way is the only way, and we're all sick of it. Go home. So I'm booted out of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the longest walk home ever. You get kicked out of the A&A, man. It's pretty heavy stuff. So I go to the church in the morning thinking, well, everything's going to be all right. And the pastor calls me out and he says, when you're in the church and we're praying and I'm up there preaching, who's the audience? And I said, well, if you're preaching and I guess I'm the audience. And he said, yeah, that's what I thought you'd say. But you're not the audience. God is the audience. We're worshiping God. This is about God, not you, Marty. Why don't you go back to Alcoholics Anonymous? And because he said, you know, we've got churches full of people that can help with that stuff, but there's not many people can talk to a puking drunk. Like he really understood. And so he sent me back to the A&A. And I got to somehow re-enter Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked by this old guy, and I remember that first meeting, and he said, there but for the grace of God goes God. And I was back among my peeps. You know what I mean? And we got out in the car and Shrek said, your only problem is that you're alcoholic. You want everything. He said, you're the kind of a guy that would go to an all-you-can-eat buffet and try and get two tickets. You know what I mean? Like, you want everything. All of it. All the time. And he said, I think what happened with you and the God thing is that you started to think you needed more God than any human being is absolutely entitled to. You see, I suffer from a situation where my mind is trying to protect me all the time. I learned this in the fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found out that I make a number of mistakes. It's not about my part in something. I make these mistakes over and over because I'm selfish and I'm inconsiderate. I don't mean to hurt people. I don't even notice I've done it. Do you know what I mean? I always was amazed when I'd heard earth people and their eyebrows were way high because I didn't know what I did. You know, I didn't know how to love back. I didn't know how to tell you I appreciated you. I didn't know how to do any of those things. I've learned all those things since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know that I was dishonest. You know, if you're an internal liar, it's very difficult to catch yourself. You know that story about the fire chief, that's the guy that's burning all the houses down and they've hired the fire chief to find the arson? It's that, you know what I mean? It's around and around and around. I could never catch me lying. I thought, I really honestly believed my own stuff. BYOB means believe your own bull. And so in Alcoholics Anonymous, they're trying to call me up to write the stuff down, because once you write this stuff down, miraculously, you can't continue to lie to yourself about it. You see, that's the interesting thing about this program. Written in 1939 by a butt doctor and a stockbroker, think about that. How apropos is that? A guy that works with broken rear ends and a BSer. Yes! That's who I'd pick. And they wrote these steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, and what they knew was that for somebody like me who is completely delusional and incapable of being honest with myself, they were going to have to find a way to disconnect what I was saying from what I was going to find out. And I probably do at least a fifth step every week where I live. I probably do one or two four steps, work through four steps with people. And what I find absolutely incredible about that journey is that every single time I do it with somebody else, I learn another depth of my own self-deception. It's like a house of mirrors if you're an alcoholic. It's not so easy to get down to the truth or to lay it down or say, I choose to be happy. I don't choose to be happy. I choose drama. You know what the word drama means? Look it up. It means comedy and tragedy. I like that. You know, like something going on. And so when you start asking me about becoming serene or having peace, I don't know what to do. It's like gliding, and it makes me very uncomfortable. The serenity prayer, to me, there should be a third option. You know, you go to your sponsor and you say, the tax people are after me. And he said, well, you're going to have to do something about it. Well, I can't do anything about it. Well, then you have to accept that they're after you. I can't accept they're after me. Then you're going to have to do something about it. You have to change that. I can't change that. Well, then you're going to have to accept it. You're going to have to accept that I can't accept that they're out. Are you listening to me? Well, then you're going to have to change it. You've been talking to my sister. What is the matter with you? You know, this is a program of talking it honestly out with somebody when you're in trouble. The hardest thing to do is out yourself with people that you love, and they're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there is nothing more healing than that very thing. That was the great thing about Shrek in the early going. We used to go and we'd pick newcomers up. He had a van with two seats, no seats in the back. We'd pick the newcomers up. He'd go up and down the ditches, roll the newcomers around until they'd admit that there was a power greater than themselves, and then we'd go to a meeting. He said to me one time, have you ever driven a combine? These are the big things that cut wheat. I said, no, of course not. And he said, well, you know, I noticed when we drove into town here, there's a farm dealership there, and the gate's not locked. I said, so? He said, well, we're stealing a combine. That's what. So we got on this thing. I mean, it's all fun. We never did really do anything like that, but it was always this kind of like sense of pending doom and excitement and stuff like that. First 12-step call I ever went on was with a guy named George Cavanaugh. We went in, the cupboards were ripped off the wall, the woman had a black eye, the guy's got his face to the wall on the couch, and so my experienced 12-stepping buddy is talking to the drunk. I'm in the kitchen talking to her, and I say, does he always get violent when she drinks? And she says, he never gets violent when he drinks. That's one of the good things about him. I didn't understand. She can't tell me the truth. She doesn't know if I'm going to take her children away or I'm going to report her to the police. She's not going to tell me anything. The guy dies while we're there. Yeah, first 12-step call ever. We go to the meeting in the morning. I'm looking for drama. I'm looking for sympathy and support. George gets up and says, don't take him on a 12-step call with you. Yeah, he's in the kitchen hitting on the wife and the guy dies. See what I'm saying? There is nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous that can't be lightened by just having some fun. You know, that was a tremendous learning experience for me. And I've seen a couple of people die. We had, like last month in Richmond, British Columbia, we had five different kids go out. And three of them died. And see, because one of the things that's happening out there is that the alcohol is not enough. They're trying to top it off with other stuff. I mean, they're alcoholic. That's where that all comes from. But they try to just take it to the next level. And they die. I've lost I lost two nephews last year. One that drank some methadone at the end of the night and died. And then I lost another one that got in his car, took his kid to school, drove out 2 miles out of town, put a shotgun in his mouth, and blew his head off. And the reason is that he had untreated alcoholism. And so, there's just simply nothing more important than what we do in these rooms here, that we carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a message as simple as this. If you'll do what we do, you don't have to do what you do. If you'll just take my hand and walk through this tunnel, nothing will change, as Bill said when he woke up in the Charlestown's hospital. And then he said, nothing's changed and everything is different. Yeah. So I started to do the steps with Shrek. I got back to the meeting and he said, the step two is really simple. I'm going to be a power greater than yourself. And you're going to turn your life and your will over to me. And we started to go on fishing trips with people I didn't like, to catch fish I didn't want to touch, to talk about stuff I wasn't interested in. And I found myself over a period of time looking forward to the next time they kidnapped me, because it was actually fun. We played baseball. I don't know about you. I was a cocktail lounge drunk. So I would get hammered in these dark rooms and then act out in the dark somewhere. But they were taking me right straight out into the light, and they were not drunk or anything, and screaming and yelling like fools and playing baseball. And the first game we went to, there was a van full of kids. They were drinking and playing guitar. And we started playing baseball, and they packed up and left because they couldn't stand the pressure. You know what I mean? I started to understand, you can have more fun in Alcoholics Anonymous sober than you could ever have when you're drinking, because you're present. See, I was never present in my own life. And so over these years, just this amazing journey, I had three children. I have Donovan, the one that was 6 months old when I sobered up. Donovan is now 38 and a half years, almost 39 years sober. So he's sober 6 months longer than me. How that happened was, when he was about 9 years old, I was sitting in a lawn chair out at the pool, and he came up beside me and said, how do you get into Alcoholics Anonymous? Because you were coming to our house to visit, and you were coming for Christmas dinner, and he was talking to you guys, and he decided that, the way he drank Pepsi and 7-Up and everything like that, he guzzled everything, couldn't get enough of it, had a bad attitude. He said, if that's what that is, I've already got it. I don't need to drink to find that out. And he's never drank. Yeah, isn't that amazing? So if you're in the room tonight and you're scared, skinny, that your kids are going to be disasters, don't bet on it. I have a middle son. Donovan's a very successful computer scientist, just brilliant guy, concert pianist. Like, how does that happen? In a family of alcoholics, how does that even happen? Except that God and you and this program of Alcoholics. Then I had a middle son. He's in marketing. He's a really different guy. I talk to him almost every single day. We phoned one of my best friends, and then we had my daughter Lee. And at 16 years old, she went out and got a bottle of vodka and a pack of smokes. There was no smoking or booze in our house. When we came home, she was hammered, cigarette in hand, and said, obstinate, oversensitive. And this went on for about a year, and she was bringing guys home that, scare you. And so I just loaded her and her 18-hand horse and sent her off to a private girls' school. She was so grateful. Yep, came home at Christmas, 50 pounds overweight with a brush cut, all the way down the escalator, giving me one of those, And her mother saying all the way down, don't react. Just, I thought, this is it. This is what it's going to be. And so, she went to the school for that year, and then she went, we decided that she was going to come back and finish her grade 12 in Alberta. We'd moved to this little community, and one day at the supper table, she said, would you take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I don't know about you. I didn't know. I thought, if I smile, I'm going to blow it. If I don't smile, I said to her one time, I like your sweater, and she started crying. I said to her, Mother, what did I do? She said, you're so stupid. What did I say wrong? She said, well, you might as well have said you hated her clothes yesterday.
What the hell?
See, oversensitive. And we go, Anyway, we go to this. Now, Alberta is like Texas, right? There's all cowboys. Here's how they settle things in Alberta. They drive up in a pickup truck and shoot you in the face. That's basically how it works. I hate you. And so we go to this meeting, and it's in this little town called Sylvan Lake, and nobody there owns a car. It's all pickup trucks. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, when I get her into this meeting, what is she going to possibly hear? It's a bunch of cowboys. And we get into the meeting, and every teenager from the planet Earth was in that room. I don't know how God did that, but there's these kids in there, and they ask them to speak, and they're going like, you know, so, I don't, you know, like, oh, so. That's totally wiped, and that's all I got, and I look at her and she's going, wow, you know? Anyway, she stopped drinking and she's fine. So a 39-year-old, 37-year-old, and a 35-year-old, all launched, all successful people, no active alcoholism in any of their... They're incredibly good people. And then, Shrek had told me one time, you know, if your Al-Anon wife ever really works the program, she'll divorce you. And it was close. A little different. She went to Al-Anon for years and years and years, and we had an incredible marriage. And then she stopped going to Al-Anon for about 9 years, and she healed and became perfect again. And one day she said to me, we have nothing in common. The kids are all successful. There's money. Let's divorce. And I thought, you know, I do the dumping. You don't do the dumping. But we ended up and we divorced. And so I went out into the... I had never been single. I mean, I've been from age 16 until this divorce, 31-year marriage. I went down to Washington, D.C. and started doing children's cartoons and messing about. And it was wonderful. And I quit going to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to be wonderful. And... In no time flat, I didn't know left from right, up from down, right from wrong. I was completely insane in no time flat. Thank God I never relapsed drinking, but crazy. Oh, my God. Any problem I have today stems from that 2 years, 10 years ago. I swear to God. And I meet this girl, and we're doing stuff, and she gets pregnant. So I phoned my daughter, and I say, you're going to have a new little brother. She said, let me get this straight. You knocked your girlfriend up? See, at 56, you don't knock people up. It's a miracle. A miracle happened in Daddy's life. Yeah, so I got a little boy. His name is Luca. Luca is sensitive. If this guy's not a drunk, I'm not a drunk. I'm telling you, I said to Carrie the other day, get him a beer. Let's get this over with. He's 7 already. You know, if you ever wonder about the arrested juvenile ego, watch a 7-year-old. It's like watching a newcomer. They're exactly the same. They pout, they throw themselves around, they withhold. They do all the same stuff. And Luca goes to school and he announces, my dad has an AA birthday. Do you guys know what that is? He says to me one day, what's this God, how big is this God guy? I said, massive. He says, well, can you get him in your car? I said, Luca, he's everywhere. He's God. Well, is he bigger than our school? I said, Luca, everywhere. He's right inside of you. And he went, oh, gross, like right inside of me? Yeah. And so here's what I just want to tell you two things. Do not pray for patience. Bad idea. And do not go to a podium and say you could have been a great father. Because that's what I did for years. I thought, I really financed my first family. I was not involved with them. I was so busy becoming successful and sober. And what happened was God said to me, well, I'm going to give you another try at it. And so in Luca's first probably month of life, his mother developed a thing called postpartum depression. And this is, I'm telling you, this is not theory. This is a different kind of crazy altogether. And so for the first 6 years of Luca's life, I raised him. I was his only, his parent. Other than the breastfeeding, which is very painful. Probably the happiest experience of my entire life. And I went into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I take Luca to the A&A meetings. And I'm telling you, I really understand what this stuff is all about. I understand a father that could love a son no matter what's going on. I understand that there's a power that is greater than myself that is above all of my petty thinking and all of the stuff that I do. I understand he's not waiting for me to screw up. He already knows I'm a screw up. I don't have to prove it. He's waiting for me to take the easier, softer way. It's row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, not up the creek, Marty, for God's sakes. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm surrounded by rooms of people that contain God. The only way that I will lose my contact with God is if I stay away from you. You see, and I'm another one of these guys. I'm fanatic about home group. I will not, if you won't come to home group, I will not sponsor you. That's, it's as simple as that. And the reason is, that's clan. That's family. That's the place where you go and everybody knows your name. And that's the place where you actually have the most sense of the thing that we lack the most, belonging. Because the first stage in the alcoholic death is to be in a room and be alone. Do you know what I mean? To be connected to somebody and not be able to connect with somebody. The second stage is apathy, where you can't connect and you don't care anymore. And the third stage of the alcoholic death is where you go mental and you start thinking everything that's hurting you is good and everything that is bad for you is what you actually need. And then comes the physical death. And I wish with all my heart and soul it would be, you're dead. Doesn't work like that. You know, you're going to turn a high yellow. You're going to puke a lot. It takes forever. Nobody's going to care about you. It is a horrible death. And so in Alcoholics Anonymous, all we're saying to you is stay with us. You're going to be forced to eat great food with people that you never, ever dreamed you would have as friends. You're going to have some committee somewhere phone up and say, would you like to come and talk at our convention? We're so insane, we'll pay your way. Maybe as you talk, you'll learn something. Maybe not. But it doesn't matter. The whole point of it is, I walk into rooms of strangers constantly. I have absolutely no fear of you. I don't have to deliver the greatest talk in the world. It doesn't matter. I'm just here sharing what I've got today. Whatever you can take from it, take. Whatever you don't like, leave. This is not about a sobriety contest or being popular. Alcoholics Anonymous is a place where we can just come and be. Just come and be. Be just as you are. And so it's amazing. I'm just going to close with, there was a guy that was very instrumental in my recovery. His name was Wesley Parrish. He was out of Pompano Beach, Florida. The 90th day of my deal with Shrek, coincidentally, was Gratitude Day in Saskatoon, and Wesley was the keynote speaker. And Wesley delivered an amazing talk, and I'd never heard a word he said. All I knew was he was overweight, and he had a diamond ring and a motorhome. I wanted what he had, the diamond weight and the motorhome, but the rest of it I wasn't interested in. And so I was looking over here and looking over there and looking at my shoes and just being generally bored. And when it was over, everybody came to their feet and they all rushed toward Wesley to give him a little hug and thank him for his talk. And I just started heading for the door because my commitment was over. And I thought, I'm going to get hammered and then I'm going to burn Shrek's car down. And then he had a dog with no teeth that they thought was hysterical because this dog couldn't even bark. It was so old. You knock on the door and... And, oh, I hated Shrek in those days. So anyway, I bolt out the door. I get to the parking lot and I turn around and here's this little Wesley. He said, where you going, boy? I said, I'm going home. I'm done. He said, and I swore at him. He said, you know, when some people swear, they sound good. You sound bad when you swear. You sound like an idiot when you swear. He said, I think also you're a chicken shit. I said, why? And he said, because I think you've got something inside of you so big it scares you. You're not man enough to face up to what you actually are. And he closed that night with this poem called The Auctioneer. And it's just everything that there is about sponsorship. It's everything that there is about these rooms. And somebody just moves up beside you that you may never see again in your life. And they just change your whole life. You know, and it just happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm saying to you, if you're new, be open. You never know. when they're coming. But it goes like this. It was battered, scarred. The auctioneer wondered if it was even worth his while to sell that old violin, but held it up with a smile and he said, "Good evening, friends. Who'd start the bidding for me?" And somebody said, $1. And he said, $1, who'd make that two? $2, who'll make it three? $3, $3 once, $3 twice, going and gone. But no, a gray-haired man from the back of the room came and picked up the bow. And he dusted off that old violin, and he lovingly tightened the strings. And the music he played is the sound that's made if a chorus of angels should sing. Well, when he was done, the auctioneer, but now in a voice soft and low, said, "Now what am I bid for this old violin?" And he held it up with the bow. $1,000. $1,000, said he. Who'd make that two? $2,000. Who'll make it three? $3,000. $3,000 once, twice, going and gone, said he. Well, some in the crowd laughed out loud, but others could not quite understand what had changed the value. And quick came the reply. It was the touch of a master's hand. And many a man with his life out of tune, battered and scarred by sin, is auctioned for cheap by a thoughtless crowd. Just like that violin, a mess of pottage, a bottle of wine, a game, and he stumbles on, going once, he's going twice, going and almost gone, and a master appears. And we still don't understand the life that's been got, or the soul that's been wrought, with just the touch of that master's hand. Thank you for letting me share this with you this weekend. Good night.
This recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.